So we began, Ruth. I it was noted in the email, but I'll just speak this out again. We're trying to set it up such that each share is kind of like its standalone share. It's not like, yeah, if you miss 1 week, so you lost the whole picture. Each part has its own messages. So we might say in a way that we discussed the preamble last week. And our goal really is to get to the story of Rus herself. So last week we saw a bit about Elimelech and his family and the what they were faulted with. Now we're going to move on. So let's start from Pasuk Vav. Again, we're going to read through the Psukim, but if you don't have a Sefer, you'll be fine, I believe. We'll start from Pasuk Vav. Naomi had been living with her family in the suburbs of Moab. Her sons died. She's left with her two daughters-in-law. And here's where we start. Vatokom hivikaloisel, vatoshav miste Moab. She and her daughters-in-law got up and departed from the suburbs of Moab. Kishama Bistay Mayov, Hipokad Hashem is Amay Losis Lechem. Because she heard that back in Eretz Yisrael there was now food once again. Okay. But Tzemina Mokamasholisa Shama, Ushte Kalisa Yuma. So she taka left with her two daughters-in-law, Batelachna Baderech Loshav Eretz Yehuda, and they headed back toward Eretz Yehuda. So Naomi tells her two daughters-in-law, "Lechna shoivna isha leveisima. Go back home, each of you. Go back to your mother's homes. Yas Hashem imochem chesed kasher asisim imaveisim v'imadi. You've been so dedicated all this time. You're even trying to come back with me. May Hashem treat you in kind. But come out. Go back home." Yitain Hashem lochem. Umetzano menucha isha beis isha. Go back home. Remarry. Remember, they were not giyores at this time. Vatishak lehem. She kissed them. Vatisano kolam vativkem. Try to move through this quickly until we get to the part where we really start having the interaction with Rus. And she said, go back home. And they kissed. And they wept. They told her, no, we want to come back with you. Naomi is insisting. It turns into a whole back and forth. No, no, go back home, my daughters. Why should you come back with me? I'm going to skip to Pasuk Tesvav. What happens is, right, she pushes even harder. There's no reason for you to wait for me. I'm not going to have any more children that you can marry. Go back home, begin a new future. And Orpah turns around and goes home. Okay. Now this we already know, right? Many of the halachas of Gerus are read into these psukim. This is the classic process of trying to discourage. A person is coming to convert, and we try to discourage them, at least initially. And what happens? Naomi is half successful. Orpah goes back, and now Ruth is left. Ruth's Dovkaba, that's the end of Pasuk Gedal. Ruth is clinging to her. So Naomi says, here, your sister-in-law is going back. You go back also. So before we move on to the continuation here, I just want to note this. This again is what we see, the classic process of discouraging a ger. So there's a couple of points to note about this that I want to bring out. First of all, it's a great monument. The in the Sefer Kuzari makes a very big deal about this. When you think in terms of a major religion, one of the agendas of any major religion, of any pretty much any religion for that matter, maybe there are others that not. I'm not a bucky on religions. I only know the big ones that I've come into contact with. But in a general way, one of the major agendas of a religion is to evangelize. That's right, to bring more people into the fold. That's how Christianity got on its feet. That's how Islam got on its feet. And that is a very classic, standard, natural feature of any religion. And here's where Judaism, lahavdil, I don't want to put like just a big red letter disclaimer when we're like contrasting, because you know when you contrast things, usually it's like things that have a certain similarity. They're called religions. But lahavdil. Here's where Judaism, as a major religion, stands on its own in the fact that we have no interest in signing people up, not a sign-up club. And this is a point that in the Sefer HaKuzari, I make a big deal about this, because it's actually a whole build-up. We know the structure of the Sefer HaKuzari, right? There's a non-Jewish king who is debating with the Jewish Chacham, who wants to understand his faith. And when they're discussing what is the basis of Jewish faith, and the Chacham makes a very big deal about the national experience of Har Sinai, about how it carried over, about how Hashem actually showed himself to us, and that's what binds us to him. So the king of Kuzar comes back with what he considers a knockout punch. He says, well, if it's all based on the fact that your people had that encounter with Hashem, then it doesn't obligate me. And here's where he pushed through an open door, because the Jewish Chacham said, that's right, exactly. So the Khazari kings is in a place of, he says, so that means that I don't have to join you. That's right. So you have no like claim against me. That's right. Then what do you mean? Aren't you a religion? Yes, we have no. This is Hashem addressed those who he wanted to be a part of it. Anybody else is welcome to join, but it's true. If they believe, if they connect, if they see the truth in it, fine. But true, we have no interest in trying to draw more people into the fold. And this itself, we have to just note this as a profound monument to the Tower of Messiah. How everybody was, this is how it was set up in the first place. It's self-contained. Everybody who was here from the start. Everyone who was here from the start. A sincere people, a person who wants to join, well, that's the story of Rus. That's what we're learning now. But, and that's actually one of the pieces that the Khazari uses is in substantiating Yiddishkeit, that there's no such thing as a religion. How can you build a religion without evangelizing? You can't build a religion without evangelizing. You have to pull people in, unless it was a God-made religion where he came in one shot and created that fold. Everybody who was in, and he has them now for the rest of eternity. And that's where we are. Now, what is the idea? Why taka? Why don't we just automatically welcome anybody who wants to join? Why do we have this process? Now, it's not that we are completely precluding them. We do value very much, that's the whole story of Rus, a sincere outsider who comes and joins us. We put them on a pedestal. At the same time, we go through efforts of discouraging, of dissuading. Why do we do that? The reason we do that, and this is important to understand, is that we are afraid of the influence. We're afraid of, Klal Yisrael is not just about quantity, it's about quality. We prefer lesser numbers and higher quality. And therefore, we would rather say, we don't want to take risks of foreign influence infiltrating, of standards being lowered. We don't want to do that in order to increase the ranks. We prefer to have the core of who we are, being able to live in the highest standards possible. And we have absolutely no interest in diluting those standards in order to expand the ranks. Question?
Yeah. Oh, Bob Schubert. Okay. They're the same. I mean, in America, most Jews have no idea about Judaism. They're the same as most Christians who have no idea about Christianity either. Like, they're completely away from it all. And yet, we made a great, great effort to try to. Even though they're all the foreign influence.
That's right. That's right.
Now, is that because the neshama is different somehow?
Yes.
Does that the deal?
Yes. A Jew is a Jew. A Jew is a Jew. And therefore, any Jew is essentially a part of that package, if we'll call it that. But every Jew is a world unto himself in terms of Hashem's plan. Complications arose about 250 years ago in Jewish history and created a very confusing reality. And how do we explain philosophically the phenomenon of, like you say, hundreds of thousands, or I don't know what the numbers are, or millions, I don't know what it is, of Jews who are completely born into a vacuum? Don't know. I don't know how to explain it. But when we're talking about just on the individual essential level, every Jew is something that Hashem Kaviyachal is longing for a relationship with, who is does have that inherent connection with Hashem, who has that, well, we're not going to use the word biological, obviously, because we can't use that word here, but that bond of a father to a child. Every Jew is in that situation, and therefore, we do, yes, we definitely make a big agenda of going out for two reasons. What is Kiruv? Is Kiruv Bein Adam L'Malkut or Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi? And the answer is that it's both all intertwined, right? It's about reuniting the parent with the child. So there, what are we going to do about the concern of infiltration, of lowering the standards, of the foreign influence? That is one of the very tricky pieces of the generation that we live in today. And yes, big efforts have to be put into getting that balance of being able to set it up such that on the one hand, we can go out and do that outreach or whatever you want to call it, drawing in, et cetera, while on the other hand, figure out how to do it in a way that doesn't just open us up. It's a challenging business. And therefore, you can't go to extreme in either direction. We can't just say, well, let's just drop all defenses and just put ourselves out there to bring everybody in, because we do have to protect our standards. On the other hand, we can't leave a reality where people just are disconnected. So, yep, that's one of the very tricky features of our times. Okay, so she's discouraging her. And here's where we really start getting to see what Rus is about. This is where we really start dealing with her directly. So Ruth tells Naomi, Naomi is trying to dissuade her, right? They're trying to encourage her to leave, to go back home. And Ruth tells her, Al tifki'i bi lo'ozveich, lo shuv me'acharayich. Please don't entreat me. Please don't try to convince me to leave you and to go back home. And here's the famous pasuk, which we're going to have to spend time on. Ke'el asher telchi eleich, wherever you go, I'll go. U'ba'asher talini ali, wherever you'll sleep, that's where I'll sleep. Your lodgings will be my lodgings. Amech ami, your nation is my nation. Ve'lekayich elekayin, your God is my God. Let's go straight these two psukim, and then we'll come back and probably spend the rest of the shiur on it at least. Ba'asher tamusi amus, where you die is where I'll die. V'sham ekaver, and that's where I'll be buried. Koyasa Hashem li v'koyasif, just to translate this. Simply, without getting into the exact etymology, let Hashem pile up even more troubles on me if I don't live by this. The only thing that will separate between the two of us is death. So here's where Rus makes her very strong statement of, I am here. Now let's back up and actually break down everything she said. So, first of all, she says, she breaks it into two parts. Please don't entreat me to leave you, and don't entreat me to go back home. Making two different points here, which show us that she actually had two different agendas. Why is she insisting on sticking with Naomi now? A, because she doesn't want to leave her, and B, because she doesn't want to go back home. Which is what? Her loyalty to her mother-in-law, the Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi aspect, her care for her mother-in-law. The chesed, that's number one. The chesed. You're on your own now. You are a wealthy woman. You went through a lot. We were together all this time. I'm not leaving you now. I'm here. I'm going to care for you, and there's no way I'm leaving you. That's agenda number one. Number two is, I don't want to go back home after what I was exposed to. After having joined your family and having seen the MS, this is what I want. It's the Bikush HaEmes. It's the seeking of the truth. Two tracks she's on at the same time. And this is really where she gained her greatness. It's on both, on this double track that she gained her greatness. We stress both equally. So let's appreciate that. This brings us back to the point that we made last week. Ruth was a, we said that let's just remember what we discussed. Elimelech's family, if we're allowed to use these terms, and I'm just paraphrasing what Chazal say, we'll call it was a failure. Right? It was a failure. Their story was a failure. It didn't end up that way. Naomi ended up, pulling out. But the story was a story of failure. They left Eretz Yisrael, they went to Moab, but there was Hashem was orchestrating something and where he wanted to get them. Because, they were on their way down. But there was Rus and Moab who needed to be drawn in because of who she was before she met them. As we discussed, right? When Hashem sees that person who really wants the truth, who really has that character, who really has that sincerity, and they're just looking, where can I find it? Hashem will grant them the means. So here's where Hashem brought two things together. Elimelech and his family, they were on their way down, but Hashem set it up such that they'd be right there to encounter Ruth. They would actually draw her in. They would actually be the ones who would draw her in. And yes, she, when she met their family, and again, let's remember, these were people who were at Machlen and Kilian. At this point, we wouldn't call them the cream of the crop of the Jewish people at this point. Like they were on their way down. They married these women before converting them. But yet, she joined them and she said, oh, this is what I was looking for the whole time. This is what I was looking for the whole time. And she saw in Naomi, we see here the personal relationship, and also that she saw in her the Rebbe, that you are my connection to the MS. You are my connection to Hashem. And there's no way I'm leaving this now. There's no way I'm dropping this. I'm here to stay. So we want to stress both of those aspects, because this is what we'll see threading the whole continuation of the story. The chesed aspect, the dedication to her mother-in-law, and the sincerity aspect, the seeking of the truth. So now she says, she gives this whole long, all these different details of how I'm going to stick to you, right? I'm going to go where you go, I'm going to sleep where you sleep. Your nation is my nation, your God is my God. Where you die, I'll be buried there, etc. So Chazal tell us that these were actually responses to things that Naomi was telling her. And this also serves as a model for the way, the process of accepting a ger. Naomi told her a number of the things that we tell a ger. And this is what Ruth is responding to. One of the things that we do is we give them a sampling of different halachas you're going to have to keep to. Different halachas you're going to have to abide by for your life. So one of the things she told her was, we can't travel on Shabbos. The dinim of tchum. We're limited in our movement on Shabbos. So to this she responded, where you go, I'll go. I'll go wherever you go. Why exactly this? Why this din? Well, Shabbos is one of the first things we would bring up, because Shabbos is one of the central mitzvahs of Yiddishkeit. And Tchum was an issue which was immediately relevant because they were on the road. Okay, so that's a technicality. And then she went on and told her another halach. She said, we have Dina Yichud. We have Dina Yichud. We can't seclude ourselves with strange men. So here she told her, where you sleep, I'll sleep. I'll be with the people that you're with. Meaning I'll take my cues from you. So this is another thing that she chose to bring in here, right? She chose to bring in this inning of the Dina Yichud, which is also to bring out, she's explaining to Ruth, you have to realize that you're moving into a different reality. And this is something that we should appreciate. The Torah's standards of morals are one of the areas where we should see what Hashem, the faith that Hashem has in his people. Because the Torah's moral standards, if we just talk in human terms and material terms, they're unrealistic. They're unrealistic. I've told about the time I was in a probably said this here a few times. I was one time in a I had in a taxi with a Muslim taxi driver in India, the States. And we started bantering about, you know, this is how it works by you, this is how it works by him. And then he said to me, you know, according to both of our religions, something about, you know, the limitations on men, women, etc. But he gave me this wink, kind of like, we all know how to deal with that. So I was 20 years old at the time. I was still single. And I said, no, since I was 12, 13, I haven't touched a woman who's not my immediate relative. So he looked at me like, who are you kidding? Like, it wasn't like, who are you kidding? There's no such thing. There's no such thing. It just doesn't work that way. And you know what? Talking in human terms, he's right. He's right. It really doesn't work. But this is where we bring out that Hashem has a program of putting people onto a different plane, of taking a person and turning him into something that defies reality, that you wouldn't think a human being is capable of. You wouldn't think that a human being could be this. And this is what Hashem is telling us. I know, I created the human being. I know the greatness in the human being. I have a program for you that might seem unrealistic to you. The Rambam says this, that it says that this is one of the things that the Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar, they were weeping about, they were complaining about. Look at these standards, look at these challenges that Hashem is imposing on us. These are not things that human beings can hold themselves to. And Hashem is saying, connect with my program and you'll see that a human being can be something so much greater than what the human being would think. The human being is a godly being. Attach yourself to my program, live my program, and you'll see quite how high the human being can be. And let's appreciate that there are many aspects of our life that do defy reality. We're just used to them already. One of them is Shabbos. Shabbos is not realistic. If you think about it from a completely objective standpoint, describe this to someone on the outside. What, really? All the different details and many other areas. But this is one point. She was conveying to Ruth, you're moving into a whole different reality here. You think you can handle this? And Ruth says, yes, this is what I want. I want to be that person. I want to be that person that Hashem's Adam, not the human concept of Adam, but Hashem's concept of Adam, which is something so much greater. And then she told her, we can't worship idols. Okay, as far as we're concerned today, this doesn't sound like a big deal. Fine, so you try to avoid India. No. But let's appreciate where this was coming in those times. We're talking about, again, this was the moral idea we can connect to in today's reality. But in those days, idolatry, that was absolutely all-encompassing. It's something.
Today we have idolatry of money, of power. There's still.
That's right. If we really break it down to it, take it up to its conceptual level, it's plenty relevant today. But yeah, in those days, this was another example of something not to be involved in idolatry at all, but something that just was going against the current of reality. And here also, she's basically telling her, you're going to have to drop, you can't come in carrying any of your childhood sentiments. You're going to have to drop your whole belief system, right? All of the old sentiments of your parents' home, if you're entering, you're entering a whole different zone. No, Elikai is Elikai. Your God is my God. And then she tells her, here it gets a little bit rougher. She tells her, now, okay, so you're ready to go out on these limbs, but you have to realize that messing up carries high stakes. There are four different Nisois Bezdin. There are four different capital punishments. We talked about Shabbos. Yeah, messing up one of those halachas of Shabbos, it's a death penalty. There are four different types of death penalties. What's her response to this? Where you die, I'll die. I'll be subject to the same threats of death as you. The girl says that she was expressing, you know what, I'd rather take the risk and get killed. And because my main agenda is the next world, and I'll be better off there. But really, it's... There's also more. This is according to Chazal's drasha, but there's something more being stated here. She says, "Basher tamusi amus v'shame kover." I want to. I'll die where you die, and I'll be buried there. Meaning, what she's actually expressing here is that one of the things that Naomi told them is, coming back with me. I don't have any more children to marry you off to. You're coming back for a life of poverty, of loneliness. I'm going to live out my days now as a widow. You want to be living out the rest of your days as a widow's sidekick? I was not going to get a shidduch. And so this is basically what she's telling her. I want to question.
Why halachically can't she marry someone else? Why does she have to marry one of Noam's children? Why can't she go back there and find someone else to marry?
She can. Oh. She can. Oh. She's just telling her that there was this natural value of staying in the family and keep the family going. And she's telling, I have no more to offer you, and you can come in as a stranger. Who's going to be interested in you? As we see, it's going to become a challenge later on. We know how the story ends, but at this point, Rus and Naomi didn't know that at the time. What was Rus facing? And this is what Naomi's trying to bring out to her. You are facing a life of widowhood by choice. We're going to be a pair of widows living out the rest of our lives like this. You're a young woman, right? And to be dying, be buried as a stranger. And Rus is telling her, yes, that's what I want. I prefer that life. I prefer to come in and join, be one of the Am Hashem. Be one of the Am Hashem and to share your Elikim. Even if that means, for me, that's a cheap price. To live out the rest of my life in loneliness and to die that way. But I'll die like you die. Meaning, I'll have your end. Basher tamusi amus. She's not only saying, I'll accept that, but she's actually expressing a longing here. She's expressing a longing here. I want your eternal fate. You're telling me widowhood, loneliness, what are we talking about? 100 years, it's not a big deal. I want to be in this forever. And therefore, she's saying, halavai, halavai, she's expressing, bashel tamusi amus. I want to die with you and go with you where you go afterwards. That's what I want. Can't help it. An incident comes to mind. There's a chashan menahal in the neighborhood, Yaakov Segal. Maybe some of you have children or grandchildren in his places. So he described when his father was nifter, they were in the hospital with him, and he was an old Talmud Chacham. He lived out his days the way he wanted to. And he was at the end. He was in the hospital, and it was the end. And the children were with him, and it was that situation of, a day and another day and another day. And so this Rabbi Segal said he was sitting with him, and there was another roommate there, elderly secular man, who kept on seemed very intrigued watching this, that was going on. Then at one point when his father was out, so this person wanted to talk to him, and he said, I want to tell you who I am. He was apparently very active in one of the very leftist political parties back in the day. I don't know if he said Meretz or if it was before that. I don't remember what it was. One of the very active anti-religious secular parties. And he said, I basically spent my life fighting you guys. And he said, one thing I have to say, I've been watching your father now for this list, the peace, the peace that he's at. He said, the way he put it was, he said, "Atem yodim lamut." He said, "You people know how to die," and he was just completely taken by that. This security that I'm on a track that's I'm going exactly where I want to be going. I'm going exactly, of course, while we're here, we want to be prolonging it as much as possible, right? That's the Chavis Alvavis' famous the dilemma, right? We want to get as much as we can. We want to take advantage of the opportunity, but the knowledge that where I'm going is exactly where I want to be going. And this is what Rus is expressing here. She's saying, I'm not on that track now, but that's what I desperately want. I want to be on that track too. Okay. So now, Rus makes this impassioned statement to Naomi. So here is where Naomi, up till now, she's been dissuading. Here's where she stops. She saw how hard she was trying to go with her, how intensely she was trying to go with her. Latechdal lidaber imo. So she stopped. She stopped. Now here's something interesting. The Gra brings out an interesting point here. What's the lashon of the pasuk? The wording of the pasuk is Vatera ki misametzes hilo lechasim. She saw the efforts that she was making to stay with her. So simply understood, and that's how Rashi says it. She saw that no, she was adamant, she was tenacious. So she made the grade, right? This is what we say. Once a potential convert does push past all the obstacles we want, and on the contrary, this is the person we want. We want this person. So here, this is again the model of the way the process of accepting a ger works. She pushed, accept her. But the Gra says even more than that. The Gra says, now Naomi saw how sincere she was. Why? She saw the efforts that she was making. So this is very fascinating. Gra says, it's not like she was just on fire and saying, I want it, I want it, I want it. In which case, Naomi might be in a situation of, she's all fired up, she's all inspired. I have to get past this and see, is this real? Is it going to hold? The Gra says that Naomi saw that she's pushing herself. Meaning, when Naomi told her all those different things about go back to your family and what's with your future, it wasn't like, no, 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 no. It was a struggle. She was torn. When she said these things, it wasn't like in a fire way of nothing to talk about. It was like she saw that it was difficult. The thought of, I'm never going to see my parents again, wasn't like, good riddance. It was, no, she had tears in her eyes and she was torn and she was struggling and she was pushing. I realize all that, but still, Bashir Tamusi Amus, I want it anyways. So the Gra said, once she saw that it was so hard for her, said, okay, this is not the Yetzer Hara. On the contrary, here I'm seeing the Yetzer Hara pushing against it. If the Yetzer Hara is pushing against it, then it's real. If it's real, okay, come.
If it's real, then Yetzer Hara pushes against it.
That's right. That's right. That was the sign. The fact that she was having a hard time with it was an indication that it's the real thing. And that it's not just, you know, momentary inspiration. Then they went off together. The word shtehem has a lot of significance. Rashi brings this out. Up till now, you couldn't call them shtehem. One is a Moavi, and the other is the most aristocratic families of the Jewish people. There's no shtehem. Now that she gave this push, Hashem says, now, Naomi and Ruth, for me, I cherish them equally. They're both the same. And now, there's no difference in my eyes, Kiviyachol, Hashem says, between the two of them.
When did she actually become Jewish? Because she keeps calling her Ruth the Moab.
Well, that's going to continue calling her that all the way through. Because that was her origin. And on the contrary, you know what? It could have been that it would have reached a point where that would be a disgrace to her. But where she actually went, it reached a point where, wow, this girl is a Moavi. So at the end, it stuck with her as a title of, as a badge of honor. When I actually wonder when exactly did the formal gerus took place. I'm not sure. Okay, that's a discussion. I don't have a clear answer to that. They went ahead, Ad Boyana Beis Lechem, until they came to Beis Lechem. They finally arrived there. And a whole commotion ensued. The whole city. And they said, can this possibly be the Naomi we remember? This was a woman who traveled in style. This was a woman who had been the aristocratic of the aristocratic. She went with the whole entourage, servants. And here you see a broken, tattered, woman coming back by herself with this one escort. They couldn't believe what they were seeing. Here's what we'll end with. So she said to them, Al tikreno li Naomi. Don't call me Naomi. What does the word Naomi translate as? Pleasantness. Kiren li mara. Call me bitterness. That's a better name for me. Because Hashem has dealt with me bitterly. I went out full. I had everything. Family, wealth, everything a person could want. Vereikam heshivani Hashem. And Hashem brought me back empty. And therefore, lama tikrema li nami. Why should you call me nami? Why should you call me pleasantness? Hashem onabi v'shakai herabi. While Hashem lemaisa has afflicted me and has brought bitterness on me. She seems to be saying something pretty straightforward, but the Gur reads beautiful depth into this. And he says what she was expressing was as follows. She said, you remember me as Nami. You remember me as the woman with a pleasant life. Where did that get me? Did it get me to a place of greater emunah? Or did it bring me down? The Nami, the pleasantness brought me down. The great life that I had, and this is at the point that the Ramchal talks about. Wealth is a test. Poverty is a test. Everything in the middle is a test. Where is it going to get you? So she said, please don't call me that anymore, because that is a stain on my record. The prosperous stage of my life got me down in Ruchnius. What got me up? What gave me the clarity of that I was headed in the wrong direction? It was the bitterness. And therefore, on the contrary, I prefer to be known as that, because that's what won't be, that's what reconnected me with Hashem. And that's why she says, Rekama Shivani Hashem. Right? She's stressing, doesn't say, I went out full and I came back empty. Hashem brought me back empty, meaning now I'm coming back with Hashem. I left, laden down with riches, but without Hashem, Hashem wasn't enough of a present in my life. I'm coming back bitter. I'm coming back in an afflicted state, but I'm coming back with Hashem. This is the stage of life that I'm proud of. This is the stage of life that I want to be identified by. Because on the contrary, yes, Hashem afflicted me, but this is what brought me back to where I want to be. Now I'm back in Eretz Yisrael, back in that relationship with Hashem.
Excuse me, I missed that. See that connection.
Because she's insisting. She says, I went all full, right? I came back empty. And therefore, don't call me Nami. Don't call me pleasantness. I don't want you to remember me by that. I'd rather be called by the bitter state I'm in now. So, yeah, we could just take it at simple, at face value and say, look, I'm not the Nami you remember. But this is the depth that the girl gives it.
It sounds a little bit like Yaakov. When he's complaining about
it. So this is the difference. This is the difference. Yaakov, all he said was, Ma'adrim ha'yimei chayai. But she's bringing out the point of it. He didn't say anything about Hashem at that point, right? It wasn't like he was bringing out the greatness of that. She herself is reading into it. She's saying, I went out full of everything, but I came back with Hashem, right? She's expressing, Rekom heshivani Hashem. She might be saying similar words, but she was expressing something completely different. Okay, so we sign off this perek by Vatoshav Nami Virus Hamayavia Kalosa Ima Hashava Bistei Mayav. And yes, they came back, they returned. The Hema Bob, they came back to Beis Lechem Mitchilas Ktsir Sa'ir, the beginning of the season of the barley harvest. Now, just stress, it says that. Just bring out one last point about this, which is an important preface for what's coming, that it says that the whole city fussed over them. How do you have the whole city there at once? Because I'll say that what was actually going on at the time was the Levaya of Boaz's wife. Boaz was the God Lador, who we know is going to feature into the story later. This was all timed very precisely by Hashem. They came into the town as the funeral procession of Boaz's wife was heading out. That's how it happened. And as they came into town, they encountered the whole city coming toward them. And the timing was set up exact by Hashem for the continuation of the funeral was coming. Okay, Agutavah.
Thank you so much, Agutavah. Kultav.